It is 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman, and we're on the air here till 11 o'clock. 312-981-7200. Like I said, coming up at 8 o'clock, we continue our ultimate Chicago movie cage match. And what a battle tonight. Just looking at the amazing... I mean, the two movies. You got About Last Night, and you got The Dark Knight. And I started the day, and I looked at the poll that we put up on WGN Radio, and you can vote on it right now if you'd like. It's on the Facebook page and all over the place. You'll find it. It was something like, because there was probably over 1,000 votes on it by now, because we put it up about a week ago, and it was 57% for Dark Knight, and it seemed like it was going to be a runaway because everyone loves Batman. But as the day has progressed, I just checked it, Pete. It is 51-49. I mean, this is, if this was an election night, Heather Sherrone would be going crazy. She'd be like, has anyone looked at the details from Cook County, from DuPage County? Be all that kind of stuff. That's what we're waiting on to see what the results are for Dark Knight and About Last Night. Heather Sherrone is on the line. She's the managing editor at the Daily Line. She covers all things. We talk about Chicago's, Cook County, Springfield, you name it. We're talking about it, and Heather Sherrone joins us on Wednesdays. Heather, great to talk to you.
I'm happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. All right. I saw at the beginning of the show, I said this merit promotion thing is tough to figure out. So let's start there. The Chicago Police Department interim superintendent, Charlie Beck, right? And that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He comes through and he says, you know what? My real big thing I'm going to do here is I'm getting rid of merit promotions. What does that mean?
So there are two ways for an officer to be promoted, from an officer to a sergeant, and then from a sergeant to a lieutenant, and then a lieutenant on up through the ranks. One, you can score very, very high on the promotion exams.
Okay.
Or you can do well enough on the promotion exams that you qualify to be promoted based on merit as determined by your supervisor. And that is the way that it has worked in the Chicago Police Department basically since time immemorial. And that is all a thing of the past. And what's interesting about this is that not many people remember this, because even though it only happened in 2016, that was approximately a decade ago in actual human years.
Right. Police
news. Department of Justice said, hey, the way that the Chicago Police Department does promotions is really messed up and it should be changed. It encourages corruption and clout, and it is not good for anyone involved. So this is really making good on that recommendation from the Department of Justice from all the way back in 2016.
Now, I'll play devil's advocate. I would just assume people listening to this who have jobs or outside of the police department think that merit promotions would be a good thing, meaning you do a good job on the beat. If you're a good officer and you deserve to be a sergeant, that you should have the power of your supervisor to be able to provide that, correct?
Sure. The only problem is that this system was really created back in the Daley era, when the command staff of the police department was almost entirely white men.
Mm.
And there was a real desire to promote African-American, Latinos, and women, but they weren't scoring high enough on those promotion exams. So this system was devised to increase the diversity in the department's top brass. That worked to an extent. However, it also opened the door for the people who got the merit promotions to be the people who knew a guy who knew a guy, or who was somebody's second cousin, or somebody who had the financial wherewithal to contribute to the holiday fund or the local alderman,
right,
and who had clout and could sort of move up the ranks that way.
How do rank and file police officers look at it? Because I would assume that some of them who felt like they've been unfairly kept behind, or that have been victims of clout or clout hiring, would be rejoicing this. And I would think a lot of other rank and file who don't necessarily believe that anything was wrong would be disappointed.
So most of the complaints about this system is that the city very rarely gives these promotion exams. So the last time a promotion exam for lieutenants was given was back in 2015, if you can believe that. So these tests aren't held very often. So if you are sick that day, or you have something else going on and you don't do well, you you are basically behind the eight ball for the rest of your career. The other thing is that there were allegations that these tests were basically, I don't want to say rigged, but rigged to ensure that the favored people did well enough on the tests so they could either be promoted outright or they would qualify for the merit probation. So part of what Charlie Beck is ordering is that these promotion exams will now take place every 2 years, and that is to address that source of frustration that if you didn't do well or you missed the test, you were out of luck. And hopefully it will sort of refresh that list of promotion eligible officers and make it a little bit more fair and reasonable, because it is a little bit strange to think that a lieutenant promoted this year is getting promoted based on test scores from 5 years ago.
Yeah, right. Well, and also this is just kind of interesting, because I would assume that if you hold these tests, like Charlie Beck wants to do, every 2 years, that there will be many people who would do well on a test and therefore would qualify for promotion. What does that do for budgets? What does that do? Because an officer, a sergeant and a lieutenant gets paid more than a rank file officer. Is that going to be something we got to think about, or that the city thinks about, or the police chiefs have to think about when it comes to the results of these tests?
I don't think so, because part of also what the Department of Justice reforms changed was it created more supervisory positions. So among the many criticisms of the Chicago Police Department, the DOJ basically said there aren't enough supervising officers keeping track that on officers and making sure that they're following the rules. So a number of more sergeant positions, a number of more lieutenant positions were created. So that is already sort of built into the budget, which saw a pretty big increase this year of about $120 million to pay for those reform efforts, these new positions, and a new contract for sergeants and lieutenants.
It's a fascinating story, and I guess it's good in the sense that some of the things that were actually recommended by the Department of Justice in the consent decree conversation are actually happening, which is a good thing. What else would we be looking for from the Department of Justice that has not been done or needs to be done when it comes to the Chicago police officers?
Well, a lot of those reforms were imposed on the department through the consent decree, which is basically a federal judge having the authority to tell the police department what to do. And we're still in the early stages of that implementation, but so far the police department has missed pretty much every significant benchmark on that agreement and is, I will repeat my own metaphor, woefully behind the eight ball on this. So I think that after the new year, once we're all done with the holidays, because it's hard to believe that Christmas is about 10 days away,
right.
Charlie Beck is going to really be under the gun to sort of say, okay, here's what we're going to do to get back on track with the consent decree, because thus far everybody has sort of said, well, it's the early days, everybody's figuring it out, but eventually the federal judge is going to start to get annoyed that the city isn't living up to its end of the agreement, and then it becomes a situation where the city has to explain what it's doing, what it's not doing, and could potentially face sanctions.
Yeah, and I also believe that I guess it'd be a good thing. I'm thinking about going back to the test idea.
Mm-hmm.
If there were more regulatory or consistent testing for promotions, isn't that also a possibility for advanced training? Meaning that you're studying for that test, and that the policing procedures may change. And that was a big part of what the consent decree in the Department of Justice was. And when you talk to police and you talk to the Fraternal Order of Police, they'll say the good things to take out of it is we'll get the training that we so desired. So is that part of it too? Like in the way that maybe having this test being taken more often about how you can actually get a promotion, there could be a silver lining in the fact that there's more teaching moments, or at least, tested moments when it comes to new police procedures.
Absolutely. There are any number of new rules that are in place now that were not in place 5 years ago or were even considered 5 years ago. So those sort of things wouldn't have been on that last promotion exam. So this exam is going to be 100% different than whatever that was. And you would think that if you want to promote somebody, you don't want to know what they knew 5 years ago. It would be great to know what they knew. Let's just ballpark it at 6 months ago.
Yeah, right.
Let's not get crazy here, right?
Right. Well, 773 says is a CPD employee and says the amount of secretaries, drivers, desk jockeys that get promoted through merit is staggering. It's all clout with very few exceptions.
Right.
So this was somebody
right.
who's listening and has actually been promoted twice on test scores. Heather Sharone is my guest. She is every Wednesday here on 720 WGN. She's the managing editor over at the Daily Line. I want to talk about, I thought the goofy story about whether they're taking attendance at city council. We'll talk about that. But I also want to talk about the Lens on Lightfoot stories that you guys have been producing along with other organizations, really sort of looking at the first 6 months of Mayor Lightfoot and what has been accomplished and what hasn't. We'll talk about some of those stories coming up right here after the break. Heather Sharone with us. Stay with us. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman here. Heather Sharone joining me on the line. She's a managing editor over at the Daily Line. You can find their stuff at thedailyline.net. All right, so let's before we get into some of the Lens on Lightfoot stories you guys have been working on with other organizations, news organizations in Chicago, the story about aldermen who don't take attendance, is that really what this is?
That's really what it is.
What is that? What do you mean they don't take attendance?
So typically, when a committee meeting or a city council meeting starts, you would think somebody would call the roll to figure out who's there and to see if a majority of aldermen or committee members are there so they could go ahead and, you know, conduct business. That's what you would think happens, right?
Right.
But that's not what happens at City Hall. The rules are written to assume that a majority of aldermen of a committee are present as soon as the committee is gaveled in by the chairman. So no one takes attendance. And what this does is it basically allows the city committee, city council committees, to operate without what's called a quorum, unless somebody demands a roll call vote to see if there's actually enough aldermen there. And that's been a tool used repeatedly to sort of block things from advancing. If you want to shut down the meeting, that's a good way to do it, because I want to say 80% of the time there aren't a majority of aldermen present at these committee meetings.
What else are they doing?
That's a good question.
It's their job, right?
So a while back, the Daily Line partnered with WBEZ, and we looked at the attendance records going back 4 years, and we calculated that the average attendance rate was 65%. So that's a D if you're in high school.
That's worse than Ferris Bueller.
Right. So Alderman Patrick Daley Thompson, he put together a proposal that said, no, we should really take attendance every committee meeting, make sure there are enough aldermen present. And it didn't even get a vote. The aldermen were like, no, we don't need to do that. That we're not going to do that. He also wanted committee meetings to hold half of their meetings after 6 p.m. for those of us working stiffs could get down to City Hall and participate in the meeting and figure out what they're doing in our name with our tax dollars. And they also said no to that, too.
Let's remember this, Heather. Let's remember this when the next pay raise ordinance comes up. And they're all like, I'm here. I'm ready to vote.
Interesting is that the pay raises are written to take effect automatically, so they don't have to take a vote, because nobody wants to vote for a pay raise for themselves. Aldermen can decline a pay raise, and several of them do, but it's not something that they have to do in public or anything along those lines.
I think it's pretty easy to rag on all the aldermen in town. There's something about it that they're always sort of, these stories pop up. But this is ridiculous in the sense that you're like, what are you talking about? How is it possible that you want to get in the way of recording who shows up to these meetings?
Yeah. It makes me feel like a crazy person when I explain this to people, because they're like, oh, no, that actually can't be true, Heather. I'm sorry that you're not very good at your job. It's really embarrassing for you. And I'm like, no, if that's really how it works, I promise you, I'm a paid professional at this.
It blows my mind. All right, let's move on to some of the Lens on Lightfoot stuff. Today, the Chalkbeat folks did a great story about where are we at with the mayor's promise to spend more money on students in need. But before we get to that, last week's I thought was fascinating. You guys did on the environment, and there was a real push in the campaign about a Department of Environment. We're gonna have a different agency. Where are we with that in the first 6 months? Is the environment a priority with the new mayor?
Says it is, but as the Better Government Association reported, she has not made good on her promise to create a new Department of the Environment. Instead, she's created what she's calling an office of the environment inside the mayor's office. And that will be one person who she will charge with developing proposals to address environmental issues across the city. So that is certainly not what she promised during the campaign. But when the Better Government Association asked her about this, she said, look, I had to figure out how to close an $838 million budget deficit. So some things fell by the wayside, and that was one of them. As the city gets financial footing back, she says that she will go back and sort of do what she can to fulfill those promises.
But that's the, I guess that's the issue when it comes to the campaign, and I'm glad that you guys are all doing this, because you can say a lot of big things when you're running for mayor, and you can talk about a lot of different things, but there's going to be a budget deficit every single year she's in office, and there's already a talk about it's going to be bigger next year. So for her to say that I couldn't do it this year because of the budget deficit, I wonder about priority, and if it is a priority moving forward, some of these things that she really ran, and the idea of a Department of Environment as the EPA changes, you know, and is really sort of at the whim of who's in Washington, and here we are trying to protect what we have in Chicago and the Great Lakes. Department of Environment for the city of Chicago, not just for our natural resources, but for our urban pollution, things like are happening in some of the neighborhoods, is crucial.
Right. And I think it's an equity issue, too. That's one of the mayor's favorite words. It's sort of her North Star, she says. You have neighborhoods on the north side that don't really have a lot of environmental issues. But you have neighborhoods on the southeast side where the old steel mills were and where you have all of the big factories. And now you have a lot of data centers moving there. So and fulfillment warehouses where you've got all the trucks coming from Amazon and UPS and FedEx and everything. And that those are also environmental issues, not to mention the fact that General Iron, which is a scrap recycler, is moving from the north side to the southeast side. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of that pollution with it to the southeast side. Now, are those going to be good paying jobs? I mean, that is an area of the city where there aren't a lot of jobs. So any job is really a good paying job. But that is, again, an equity issue when you're literally moving pollution from one side of the city, the north side, to the south side. City.
Yeah, and you would think that you'd want an office to kind of pay attention to that.
Right.
And so, right. And the piece you did today is another area when we talk about, you know, students in need. And
right.
That can mean anything from students, special education to disabled students, whatever it might be. Again, an area that was talked about a lot on the campaign trail, and there were a lot of great stories that came up about how Chicago schools kind of come up short. And the mayor said that she was going to make that a priority. Where are we at with that? Story.
Pretty much nowhere, also because of the budget deficit, and this is a really complicated issue. So right now, the way that it works is every high school, so we'll just take high schools, gets roughly the same amount of money per student. So if you've got an enrolled student, you get an amount of money from the school district to pay for that kid. The problem is that a student who goes to Whitney Young, my alma mater, Kenwood Academy's mortal enemy, you're dealing with a kid who's got more resources from their family and is, you know, sort of isn't facing homelessness and doesn't necessarily face mental health issues, as opposed to a student who goes to a place like Sullivan High School in Rogers Park, which has a huge number of immigrant and refugee students who have all sorts of needs from just the bare minimum of food, clothing, and shelter, you know, to, you know, do you have a place to do your homework? So the question is it fair for the city to basically give Sullivan the same amount of money that they're giving to Whitney Young when the Sullivan students have a whole range of other issues that school is being asked to address? And that's a real problem, and it really changed the way that CPS operates. And the mayor just hasn't really gotten started on that yet, perhaps because of the budget deficit, perhaps because of the strike, which sucked up a lot of the air in the oxygen over, you know, at CPS.
And some of those issues did come up in the strike that we just had.
Absolutely. Yeah. The CPU has been, the teachers union has been a vociferous opponent of this budgeting system, which is called student-based budgeting, ever since it was implemented by Rahm Emanuel when he was mayor. And it was one of those things that I think a lot of education-focused voters were really glad to hear the mayor campaign against during the election, and are perhaps a little bit frustrated that, you know, it's not the kind of thing that she has been able to achieve in 6 months, and maybe not even in her first year. But we're keeping watch.
All right, there you go. Lens on Lightfoot. You can find that all the news organizations coming together, including Heather Sharone, the managing editor over at the Daily Line. You can find all their work at thedailyline.net and sign up for their newsletter, which comes out every morning. Heather, we're not on next Wednesday because of the Blackhawks, so I say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll check back in 2020. You'll still be working, but you won't be checking in with us. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.